backcountry. I lie back under a hand-stitched painting of flower blossoms, alone on sheets so white they light up the dimmed hospital room. I'm afraid. I'm afraid, so I think of loves. Loves invited and loves let go, especially the biggest love, the love who touched the world first between these legs, just as she began to leave me. A leaving that feels like a light storm, brilliant white light that makes me close my eyes when they should be open. Even walking outside in the daytime, under the great trees of our neighborhood, trees that were saplings when I was 20 and trees that are saplings now. I've only just begun to consider my limbs, the way they've made a gateway, held my daughter, carried my daughter, the way they have held me up, carried me into an unsettled mountain valley as cold rain turned to snow, then snow cover revealed cougar tracks, walking over them its own kind of coming home to a house big and wild enough. A house that felt as I entered it like a darker kind of storm.
Beautiful, as is so much of your work, Allison. I've discovered when I started looking into your background that I've been a fan of yours longer than I realized. Not just with this new book, and congratulations, A Fine Canopy, but you've been involved in one way or another with quite a few books about the Saugatuck Dunes, and here, women writing for about the UP, our Upper Peninsula, and Freshwater. Quite a few of these books are already on my shelf.
That's so lovely to hear. Thank you for telling me.
In general, too, when I was reading this newest poetry collection, I needed to go outdoors. You inspire me to want to go outdoors. And in fact, you've been called an eco-poet. Explain what that means.
So first, let me say, you have made my day telling me that reading my poems made you want to go outside. It is certainly probably a subtext of almost everything I do, including in the classroom, is my hope and desire to inspire people to go outside. Eco-poet, I guess it's sort of the hip way of referring to a nature poet, although it has the added layer of environmental awareness and engagement. In other words, the poems written by an eco-poet would be expected to show awareness of environmental crises and maybe even a willingness to take action on them.
In fact, yeah, as I read more about you, the environmental activist you and the poet you seem to go hand in hand quite a bit. You've done a great deal to preserve and protect the Saugatuck Dunes, one of my favorite places, and your work appears in a book by the same name, which I discovered is already on my shelf. Talk to us about the dunes and the Saugatuck Dunes Coastal Alliance, because I feel like that's all one topic here.
It's such a large topic, and it's hard to know how to distill it into a few words. What I could tell you about it is this. I was living in the Pacific Northwest in my late 20s, and my husband and I decided that it was time for us to move back to Michigan for professional reasons and also personal reasons. But we are avid hikers and backpackers, and we discovered Saugatuck Dune State Park and literally became avid Saugatuck Dune State Park hikers. And this would have been, believe it or not, 1988. Fast forward to the late, let's see, right around 2000, 2001, and we became aware of that the state park was threatened with construction of a water intake and treatment facility.
Yeah.
And so we, David and I together led the charge to stop that. And I cannot emphasize enough how many hundreds, indeed thousands of people were involved by the time we were finished. So we certainly didn't do it ourselves. We just launched it. And that has now evolved into just kind of ongoing struggles with, the best way to put it is individuals and organizations, and not organizations, individuals and business enterprises that are hoping to profit by using the dunes in a way that doesn't really honor what's most valuable about them in the 21st century, which is their wildness, of course, and their ecological well-being. So I guess it might also be kind of fun for your listeners to know that I was a reluctant activist. I'm not comfortable on the front lines of any kind of activism, really. But I love that place so much. And it was clear to me that people didn't understand what was happening. And yeah. I knew that I could help tell the story to a larger audience. That is something I knew I could do. I felt comfortable knowing that I could collect the information and tell the story in a way that might engage people and get them involved.
How do you think poetry and prose too, the literary arts, can help involve others, inform others about these kind of things, you know, whether it's climate change or environmental issues?
So this is a question I've thought a lot about, talked with people about. I think it's going to be different for different people, of course, as so many things are that have to do with any kind of art and any kind of issue. But I do believe that I can talk out of my own experience, and then maybe we can generalize from that a little bit without getting into trouble. I know for a fact that my own sense of what's important and also my own sense of what contributes to my sense of well-being and also being connected into a community, which is also important to me and I think to most people.
Yeah.
Most of that has come from my very close, ongoing, deliberate attention to the places where I live and especially the wild elements of them. You know, what people will refer to as nature, but it seems more complicated than that since human beings are, of course, part of nature.
Yeah.
And it's not as a scientist. My attention is not scientific and it's not even journalistic. It's really literally taking myself out into the woods, taking myself to the beach, taking myself into the kind of wooded streets of my neighborhood and just paying attention to what's out there beside the human build. And it steadies me. It stimulates me intellectually and creatively. It makes me feel a part of something that's really old.
Mm.
And so I think, I hope that when people come to my work, they maybe have a little bit of that experience themselves, or maybe are inspired to go out and see what happens if they go out.
Yeah.
I don't really like to use that word inspired, actually, but although that's maybe a different subject, but I don't think I answered your question.
That's okay. I love tangents. That's when things get most interesting.
but as I said, I'm interested in that idea of how can these things help people become engaged with environmental crises? Boy, I would say, so here's something that I believe, and I'm not the only one who believes this. We actually have all the data
yeah.
on what our problems are and what we need to do to solve them in terms of environmental emergencies. But for some reason, we are not doing it, meaning human beings. Generally speaking, are not, too many humans are not taking the actions that are necessary. And I'm pretty sure that the thing that's going to shift that is going to be the arts, philosophy, history. That is the discipline. Those are the disciplines that deeply engage our humanity.
And there was something you said a little bit back that caught my attention, too. You kind of reminded us the human being is part of nature. And I wonder if that's part of the problem, that we've become so disconnected at times that we think of, oh, I'm going to go outside to connect with nature. I have to go somewhere away from, I don't know, suburbia or whatever to connect with nature. It's a vacation thing. And we forget that we're a part of that. It's a part of us. It's a connecting with self, actually, I think.
I agree. And I felt this way before I bore a child, but it is very hard for me to imagine any woman giving birth and caring for an infant without feeling intensely connected to what I think of as wildness.
And when you say wildness, I think elsewhere too, you've referred to the importance of listening to wild voices, to the wilderness, and that you said that we're not making that connection. We have the data. We know that we're in trouble with climate crisis, and yet we don't seem to be doing anything or nearly enough. How do we take that mainstream where people really start to care?
I mean this quite sincerely. That is an answer I do not have. But I tell you what, I will never give up trying to make the art, the literary art, that helps another person make the connection. But in other words, I wouldn't say it's in my mind every time I write. It isn't, but it is central to my sense of my purpose here on Earth.
Yeah.
What is central to that, to my sense of my purpose, is a desire to trigger connection, to motivate people, to even just to recognize that they're disconnected, you know?
Yes, that's a start. Recognize mm-hmm. the problem and then mm-hmm. think about how to solve it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you teach in the environmental and sustainability department at Western Michigan University. And I noticed that one of the topics, in fact, or classes, courses, was climate change in the literary arts. So that's actually something you work with students on.
Yes. It is such a privilege. It is such a privilege and an honor to work with college students at Western. When students land in my courses, which are generally going to be juniors and seniors, they are already well-informed and on fire to make a difference in the world. And so I get to work with young adults who care about the things that I care about, who want to learn about the things that I've been thinking about. And so I get to be in a situation where we explore these really hard questions together. And in that course in particular, I get to try on this idea you and I were just talking about, and I wasn't being very articulate about, which is, how can we make recognizing and addressing environmental crises a mainstream phenomenon? And so we actually, together, my students and I, we talk about that. One thing I'm struck by with college students in the 21st century, which is really different from when I was a college student, is they seem openly, they're open, let's put it this way, they're very open to yeah. literary art and what it might do for them, or what, you know, what kind of an impact it might have on their lives. And yet it's more than ever before. It doesn't seem that they've had a lot of opportunity to read literature and talk about it.
Allison, let's focus a little more on your new book, A Fine Canopy. And when I think of a canopy, living in the woods myself, I think of that beautiful green ceiling that I have when I walk outside, and also as a sense of shelter. Tell me what you wanted to convey with a title like that for your book.
Everything, what you just said, the forest canopy, the sense of shelter, those are the two main definitions of that word that I didn't begin with the title. I came to the title after I had the manuscript, and I like the simplicity of it. And I also have become aware that, and this is going to sound kind of funny, but you know, when you live in a part of the world where trees are omnipresent and very large, it's easy to forget that there are parts of the world where not only trees, but not even leaves really have much to do with people's sense of their place or the space that they move through on any given day. And I have become aware how central leaves and trees are to my sense of being connected to, you know, what Elder Leopold would call the land pyramid.
We are in the middle of this crazy pandemic that has changed everybody's lives. I don't think anybody has been untouched by it. But writers and poets who have books coming out are having to deal with that in a unique way. It used to be a time that we would gather with loved ones and fans and pop champagne corks and have a big old party. We can't do that anymore. Talk about how the pandemic is affecting perhaps your writing right now on whatever you're working on at the time, but also your book launch and how you plan to do author's readings and that kind of a thing.
So you've kind of touched on one of several sources of heartbreak in my life right now. I am a writer who very much enjoys connecting in person with readers, and not just my readers, but with people who like to read books and talk about books and be around books. It gives me courage and it gives me a sense of community. And so it's heartbreaking to me that I am not going to be able to do that in the near future with this book. And other sources of heartbreak, just because I don't want to be coy, are the virus and the havoc it's wreaking in human lives, and the way that our the leadership in our country has not dealt with it effectively.
Yeah.
It didn't have to happen that way, right?
Agreed,
so that's a heartbreak.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we're now, since this manuscript was accepted for publication, we're now another year into the United States not really taking any kind of real action on climate change. But to answer your question about what am I going to do because things are so different, I can only have virtual events, or I can have very small events. I'm kind of just beginning to think about that, honestly. And I find that teleconferencing is better than nothing, but it's definitely doesn't scratch the itch of wanting to be in a room with other people who love poetry the way that I enjoy doing. And then in terms of how it's impacted my writing life, I have been writing. I would say it didn't give me writer's block. I know that some people have suffered from writer's block for lots of good reasons. Number one might be the amount of stress in people's lives. And my financial situation, while changed, is not dangerous. And so I have that privilege, right? But so I just wanted to say that before I say I am writing every day and I am writing hundreds of words every day. What they will amount to, I'm not sure. I'm writing directly about life during a plague, but I think I'm at a point in my life, I'm imagining this is probably pretty common for people in their 50s, where I'm looking back over many decades, starting to see patterns, and it's kind of interesting the way that informs your writing, I think, to have all of that perspective on all the years of writing and thinking about writing and reading.
No, I think writing only becomes richer with experience.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Well, thank you so much, Allison.
Thank you.